and welcome to On and Off, our podcast covering the on-premise and off-premise beverage alcohol industry. I'm Melissa Dowling, editor of Cheers.
And I'm Kyle Swartz, editor of Beverage Dynamics Magazine. Today, we're going to be talking about natural wine with Steve Charters, master of wine and professor at the School of Wine and Spirits Business in France.
Steve recently presented an online masterclass on the emergence of natural wine. And since we missed it, we wanted to catch up with him for an update on natural wine. So welcome, Steve, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the invitation. Pleasure to be here.
So first off, my understanding is there isn't really a uniform definition of natural wines or a defined category. You know, is this true?
Yeah, I think it is true. And I think it's quite a deliberate thing. The people who are in the natural wine movement don't want it to become rigid, exclusive, bound by a single dogma. And so they want it to be fluid and open to different ideas, except for people on the outside, that makes it very difficult to pin it down. And it is also, and maybe we come onto this a bit later, it's leading to certain disagreements within the movement about what is or what isn't included. But that's certainly true. But I'd add one other thing here. I think that one of the problems a lot of people have with the term natural wine is it becomes binary. Natural exists in contradistinction to unnatural. And by implication, they're sort of saying, well, what we do is natural. What everyone else does is very unnatural, which is a really negative, implicit connotation. And I don't think even people in the natural wine movement have thought through that necessarily, but it's how it works out in people's minds, I think.
Would you have a term to use other than natural?
Yeah, if it was down to me, I would probably say non or low interventionist wine, because the people who are trying to make that natural wine are trying to do it without adding too much or manipulating the wine too much, which is a very laudable thing. But I think low interventionist is probably a more accurate designation for it. But then I'm not in the movement and it's not up to me to tell them what they call themselves. Really.
You'd probably get some pushback from the marketing folks on that phrase as well.
You might well do.
I've also heard that, you know, natural wine is really a consumer-led trend that started decades ago. Now, would you say that's true, or have the grape growers and winemakers been, you know, have a lot more to do with it?
I think it is the idea or the move, the phenomenon, which is natural wine, is much more to do with grape growers. But I think that it has emerged because it offers producers and consumers and indeed intermediaries, critics, writers, bloggers, it offers everyone some benefits. But if you look at the origins of what has now become natural wine, there's a number of different places they go to, but a lot of it stems from France and particularly the Beaujolais region in France, where there were a few people early on, and particularly a guy called Jules Chauvet, who was actually a very scientific producer, but he used his knowledge of science to criticize many of the trends that were happening in the production of Beaujolais at the time. Now, what Jules Chauvet has started has been built on by a number of other people. And you get a whole range of things now included. You get Pet Nat, so very ancestral method sparkling wine that's a bit cloudy, a bit hazy. Orange wines made by fermenting white wine on the skins of the wine. Use of ancient production methods, like going back to old clay amphorae, perhaps for fermenting your wine. And then this whole idea of the vin de soif, as the French would call it, the wine of thirst, or glue, as it's known. That wine shouldn't be complex. It should be easy. It should be very convivial. It's just there to drink, not to analyze, not to pontificate about a great deal. So there's been a lot of things that have come into it. A lot of this started with producers who were not happy with the way large volume wine production was going. Modern scientific techniques were becoming more and more interventionist. But I think, just to finish this particular question off, you can look at the consumer side and you can go back to a lot of texts that were happening 30, 40, 50 years ago, things like Only One Earth, Silent Spring, Schumacher, Small is Beautiful, these things that from the 60s and 70s onwards tried to refocus people away from the assumption that science and technology could just deliver all the agriculture, all the food we wanted, all the organization that we wanted, and asked us to rethink our relationship with the world. And I think that has had an impact both on producers, but also on consumers, as did the counterculture movement in the States, as has feminism as well, challenging a lot of assumptions about how society, business, consumption should be ordered and regulated. I hope that's not too technical or theoretical for you.
You brought up the consumer side, and that was a question I really wanted to ask you. What do you think the consumer take on natural wine is?
Look, there's a lot of consumers who really like natural wine. It really works for them. It offers them something that is healthy or healthier, they would say. It offers transparency. You know what you're getting. You're getting a very simply made wine that's not had different yeast added to it to manipulate the way it might taste, or enzymes in order to make it easier to produce it, or sugar, or all kinds of other things. Okay, so it's very transparent. And I think these things gel really well with young people, especially. I mean, young people are very environmentally aware. The fact that it says it's natural suggests it's better for the environment. And, you know, generally it is. It's better for you. It was originally much cheaper than conventional wine as well. You were doing less to it. It was cheaper to make. Although nowadays, some of the cachet, some of the hype that comes around it is making natural wine perhaps a little bit more expensive because people are after it. And I mean, the other big thing it offers consumers is simplicity. You don't have to learn about terroir. You don't have to learn about the use of oak in a wine. You don't have to think about what the winemaker's doing in the winery. It's just someone who's trying to make a simple wine for you to enjoy with your friends. I think there's one other thing that is perhaps a little less understood that makes natural wine quite appealing. Wine for 8,000 years has been seen to be transformative. It starts off as a magical product because no one understands it. No one knows where it comes from. It's associated for thousands of years with religion. Now, these days, most people don't see the link with religion, with Christianity or Judaism or whatever. That doesn't matter. But there's still this sense that wine changes you. It makes you someone different. You know, the very simplest, you're at a party, you see someone you like, you want to go and talk to, you have a glass of wine quickly just to give you the courage to go and approach them. And I think natural wine really plays into this transformative idea. You're drinking it and you are making yourself a better person and you're changing the world as well. And that's a very laudable thing, transformative.
Well, in the wine industry, there's so much concern that people aren't drinking as much alcohol. They're not drinking as much wine. The young people coming in are not drinking wine. You know, they're not really on the path to wine the way people used to be. Do you think natural wine could improve upon that or get more people into wine?
I think it's possible. I mean, the generational shifts in wine consumption are very complex to understand. And for a long time, the millennial generation, Generation Wine, were drinking a lot less wine. It was very interesting researching them because they used to, you know, when they were 18 or 20 or 22, they used to say, I don't drink wine now, but I will in the future. They were predicting that there would be a shift. And we do see that now as the millennial generation is just aging a little bit. They are coming to wine. Okay. So it is Gen Z, you would call it, which is the generation which is really apparently drinking less and less wine. They share a lot of the concerns of the millennials around things like the environment. And I think to the extent that they might come to wine, something like the natural wine movement is, if you'll excuse the pun, naturally made for them. It's there offering them this whole other dimension of simplicity, transparency, transformation, environment, and what's even better, their parents don't like it. And we've seen over the last 40, 50 years, trends in wine amongst generations go with young people not wanting to do what their parents do. They want to distance themselves from them. So I'm sorry, this sounds like I'm being really patronizing to these young people. Good luck to them. Don't drink what your parents are drinking. Enjoy natural wine, because there's some really good natural wines to be drunk. Get on with it. And I would hate to be thought of talking down about these people. But I think this may be one thing that does help the wine industry of the future. Having said that, is it going to become the main way of drinking wine? I don't think so. I think it's very similar to organic wine, biodynamic wine, which have become significant and have got their place in the wine industry now and are now becoming more and more significant with environmental concerns. But they don't yet dominate what consumers are trying to drink. I think natural wine for a long time will be the same. I think it will be another trend. I mean, the great thing is, if you love wine, there's so much in wine to enjoy. And the more we offer, the more variety, the more ways into wine that's offered, the better it is for consumers.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think you're being patronizing towards younger people when you say that, because I'm seeing the exact same trends myself, and I'm having other people tell me the same exact trends. I always bring up, there's a store in coastal Jersey, one of the wealthy neighborhoods in New Jersey. And yep. They're near Monmouth College. I'm going to pronounce that incorrectly. But anyways, they have a lot of younger people in their area. And the way they're connecting with them is natural wines. They have one of the largest natural wine selections, I think, in the country. Mm. And they said that they've had a lot of success with younger drinkers with natural wines. And I think you said it very well. You said earlier that natural is kind of synonymous with simplicity in a lot of ways. I think the problem that the younger drinkers have with wine is that they feel overwhelmed by it. There's so much going on. They don't have the ability to easily learn what all of the different AVAs and varietals and this and that production method. So they're turned off by it. Where natural is just like, oh, this is natural. What more do I need to know? It's made naturally.
It's interesting, because a lot of us have been saying of the wine industry for 20 or 30 years, they are useless at actually communicating with the general public. The apparently good marketing speaks to an audience that's expected to know something. And we've needed for a long time to open up our communication within the wine industry with people, younger people, people who don't necessarily come with, you know, the college education that gives them the ability to do the research, or even the inclination. I mean, they may well have the education, but they just don't want to have research. They just want to drink something interesting. In some ways, natural wine has, I think, some affinity with craft beer. You don't have to know a lot about craft beer to know it's beer that's made probably in a less mass-produced way, perhaps a bit more healthily and with a focus on taste. Great. Bring it on. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, no, totally agreed. And I've been harping on this for years now, the need for the wine industry to communicate better with younger people. I just don't really see it. I see some of it a little bit on social media now. I like to bring up Gary's Wine and Marketplace, another New Jersey retailer, one of the original importers of European wine, I believe, in the country, at least on the East Coast. Anyways, their social media, being run by the second generation owner there now, is phenomenal. They do these wine education videos. And what I like about them is they can't make them simple enough. And I think that's what they need to do with the younger drinkers. Like, there's a wine video that did great for them that's literally just, why do we swirl wine? You know, and that's what I'm saying, is that they need these basic building blocks to help the younger people kind of take the step up. And I do want to see more of that from the industry.
Well, it's absolutely critical. Sorry, Melissa. Yeah,
that's okay. I was just going to say, one of the good things about the younger generation is that they're not that intimidated. You know, they want to learn. Whereas previous generations might want to pretend that they know more than they do, or, you know, or just be too intimidated to get involved. They really want to know what's going on and why you do something, what this means, and aren't really afraid to learn, or, you know, just to say that they don't know.
I think that's a really good point. Can I add a gender-related issue here?
Sure.
Because the traditional discourse about wine is great for males. It allows you to show off your knowledge of the Cru Classé of Bordeaux or the top producers of the Napa Valley or whatever it is. And you can start to list soil types and grape varieties and all these kinds of things. And it just factors in to male categorization and ordering of things. And I think, as you know, we've got a generation of younger females who really want to engage with wine, but don't necessarily come into it thinking, how can I show off with this? How can I establish my status with this? But rather, how can I have a good time with my friends with this? Natural wine, which with its apparent simplicity, just factors into that really neatly.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the wine industry, it's probably like work in general. As women came into the workplace at higher levels, they would try to act like men. You know, they would try to wear suits and be loud, and because they had to. So I have seen a lot of women in the wine industry, you know, back in the day doing the same thing, because that's how you make yourself heard, or that was the industry. So that's where you started. So I do think that is changing. Just the people coming in just don't feel the need to do that, which is great.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You said you thought natural wine was going to remain popular, but not be the main way of drinking wine. What do you think the main way of drinking wine will be moving forward?
Well, I mean, look, the broad category of what people drink now is conventional wine, you know, and that goes anything from a mass-produced $5 or $6 wine from the Central Valley of California through to the very best wines you can get from Napa Valley or Sonoma or Oregon at many hundreds of dollars. But they are all produced using conventional, quite interventionist methods. The big advantage of those wines for many consumers is you know much more precisely what you're going to get. There's a certain random nature with natural wine. Not quite sure. And some of the natural wine movement proponents have said this is a good thing. You open a bottle and you never know if it's going to taste the same as the last bottle of the same wine that you opened. That's the variety, the diversity, that's the excitement. There's a lot of people who love the security of buying a wine they've always bought and knowing it's going to taste the same. And that's why conventional wine does so well at many levels. And I think, you know, that's going to stay the same. I mean, if someone buys a car, they don't want the car that comes with perhaps the wheel falling off, or maybe the gear shift not working and breaking off, or, you know, the trunk not opening or whatever, which is the sort of natural wine equivalent of a car. There are times when people want to buy something and know they're just what they're going to get. So I think that will remain the mainstream. I do think what's interesting is a lot of mainstream producers experimenting with natural wine techniques, not because it's going to come to dominate what they make, but because it's another useful thing that they can do. Now, you can either say, well, that's lovely because they're offering natural wine drinkers another take on natural wine, or you can be cynical and say, well, it's just a marketing device to show that they're as natural as the next producer. And hey, alongside all of these highly interventionist wines, we've got one or two orange wines and a pet nat that people can enjoy. So, you know, there's different ways of seeing it. But I think that natural wine is going to have a positive impact in making wine producers think, do I need to do this? Do I need this intervention? It'll happen slowly. It'll percolate through slowly. But that's going to be a positive thing. But I still think more conventional styles will dominate for decades to come.
Yeah. I would agree with that. All right. Well, I think that is all the time we have for today. Thank you again, Steve, for joining us.
You're welcome. It's been a great pleasure. And I hope it hasn't been too theoretical or technical. But
Not at all. It was really good.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent talk. And I do like to always try to complete any thoughts on unfinished thoughts. I had mentioned a Jersey retailer earlier that was succeeding with natural, bio-organic, and sustainable wines. I just want to say that was Court Liquors in Jersey. We wrote about them recently. I just realized I brought them up without saying who they were. And thanks to everyone out there who's listening to On and Off. Join us next time when we'll be talking about yet another fascinating topic that spans the retail and restaurant worlds. Until then, cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed the On and Off podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Also, you can find more great content at cheersonline.com and beveragedynamics.com, including recipes, product reviews, and interviews with the movers and shakers of the beverage alcohol industry. You can also sign up for our free weekly e-newsletter for both publications on our websites. Cheers!